Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Madhava Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Madhava Kunjabi Hari Gopi Jana Balabha Girivara Dhari Gopi Jana Balabha Girivara Dhari Jasoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana Jasoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana Jamuna Tiravana Chari Jamuna Tira Vanachari Jai Girivara Dadi Gopi Jana Balabha Girivara Dadi Girivara Dadi Jasoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana Jasoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana Jamuna Tira Vanachari Jamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Jaya Vishnu Pad Paramahamsa Harimitacharya Astara Satsasi Sri Madhasta Divine Grace Sri Sri Bhaktivedanta Swami Sri Prabhupada Ki Ananta Koti Vaishnavinda Ki Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Samveda Bhaktavrinda Ki Nitai Gorpemanandi All glories to the assembled devotees All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga Okay, a favorite brahmachari verse this morning. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Text 8, chapter 5, canto 5. Pung sam striyap maituni bhavametam. Tayor mito hridaya grantim ahuhu. Ato grihakshetra sutapta vittayir. Janasya moho yamaham mameti. Pung sakshriyak maituni bhavametam. Tayor mito hridaya grantim ahu. Ato grihakshetra sutapta vittayir. Janasya moho yam aham mameti. Taksriyak matuni bhava metam. Atho grihakshetra sutapta vittayar. Janasya moho yam aham mameti. Pungsakshriyak matuni bhava metam. Tayor mitor daya granti maho. Ato grihakshetra sutapta vittayar. Danasya moho yam maham mameti. Ladies. Pungsakshriyak maituni bhava metam. Tayor mito hridaya granti maho. Ato grahakshetra sutapta vittayar. Janasya moho yamaham ameti. Pungsakshriyak maituni bhava metam. Pungsakshriyak maituni bhava metam. Tayor mito hridaya grantim aho. Ato grahakshetra sutapta vittayar. Janasya moho yam aham mameti. Pungsaha of a male. Sriyaha of a female. Matuni bhavam, attraction for sexual life. Etam, this. Tayoho, of them, of both of them. Mituha, between one another. Hridaya grantim, the knot of the hearts. Ahuhu, they call. Attaha, thereafter. Griha, by home. Kshatra, field. Sutta, children. Apta, relatives. Vittai, and by wealth. Janasya, of the living being. Mohaha, illusion. Ayam, this. Aham, I. Mama, mine. Iti, thus. Translation: the attraction between male and female is the basic principle of material existence. On the basis of this misconception, which ties together the hearts of the male and female, one becomes attracted to his body, home, property, children, relatives, and wealth. In this way, one increases life's illusions and thinks in terms of I and mine. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Sex, serves as the natural attraction between man and woman, and when they are married, their relationship becomes more involved. Due to the entangling relationship between man and woman, there is a sense of illusion whereby one thinks, quote, this is my husband, or this is my wife, unquote. This is called Hridaya Granthi, quote, the hard knot in the heart, unquote. This knot is very difficult to undo. Even though a man and woman separate, either for the principles of varnashram or simply to get a divorce, in any case, the man always thinks of the woman, and the woman always thinks of the man. Thus, a person becomes materially attached to family, property, children. Although all of these are temporary, the possessor unfortunately identifies with his property and wealth. Sometimes, even after renunciation, one becomes attached to a temple or to a few things that constitute the property of a sannyasi. But such attachment is not as strong as family attachment. The attachment to family is the strongest illusion. In the Satya Samhita, it is stated, Pramadya Yajnavalkyadya Muchante Stri Saha Yinaha Bhodyante Kechanai Tesham Vishesham Cha Vido Viduhu. Sometimes it is found among exalted personalities like Lord Brahma that the wife and children are not a cause of bondage. On the contrary, the wife actually helps further spiritual life and liberation. Nevertheless, most people are bound by the knots of the material relationship, and consequently, they forget their relationship with Krishna. End of purport. Any questions? It'd be interesting to do a folio search and see how many times Prabhupada quotes this verse in lectures and other places. If we got a dollar for every time he did, we probably could build a temple. he was fond of this verse. Because it's revealing or explicitly expressing the basic principle behind bondage to material existence. So I was thinking that rather than just give the usual blast on this verse, I'll go a little bit different direction. In part because I'm studying Sri Brahma Samhita carefully, which is a fascinating book. And there's a whole bunch of verses in the early part of Sri Brahma Samhita that are describing in graphic language the first act of procreation. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, in his purport, normally using such language is considered indecorous. Like, you don't use these terms in exchanges with other people, unless you're, like a low-class person. But then he gives the example that in medical science and other similar professions, it's commonplace and it's appropriate. So here also, in the Sri Brahma Samhita, it's appropriate, describing the male generative organ and it's so forth, the receiving womb of the material nature. Because for purpose of making reference to this is that we find in the creation which results from the primeval act of procreation, as above, so below. It's found in everything that comes within creation. It's indelibly within the entirety of material creation. Purposefully, so that the creation can continue, and that the impetus for the creation to continue is this one. Attraction for sex. You know, think of something absurd, of, you know, one worm being attracted to another worm or something. But it's there. And they don't have to go to worm school and learn how to, you know, how to become attracted. Somehow it's there. It's a binding force. Binding force. Male-female attraction. And, you know, and then the explicit part of it is Matunya Bhavam. But Bhavam in this case means attraction, and attraction for the sex act. Matunya Bhavam. So that's there not only in human society, you know, insects, anyway, fish, birds, whatever, wherever there's life, male and female, then it's an impelling force. So Rishabhdev is instructing his sons how to not succumb to that. In yesterday's verse, the last line, asadya maitunyam agaram agya, the same word is used there. Maitunyam, when one becomes, that's the right way, that's not the right way to say, not when one becomes under the influence of, because everything, every embodied being is under the influence of, because it's built into the program. You can't delete it from your software. It's there. It's there. And then there's different versions of it. We won't go into the different versions of it, but it's there. So, a little bit like our discussion yesterday, if you remember that long ago, the principle of mixed, we have a spiritual desire, we have material desire, and there's a mix. And part of our duty, responsibility, or, you know, being progressive in Krishna consciousness, is to properly handle. Remember, we were discussing this word, ayata, unnecessary endeavor to satisfy the senses. So, what, you know, where's the line between what's unnecessary and what's necessary? And we discussed that. And when that line is identified for each person, it may be a little different. Whatever is necessary, taking up those things, like Brahma's creating universe, or whatever those things might be, to apply them in service to the personality of Godhead, and to join those activities with sadhana bhakti directly. And then by so doing, they're as liberating as sadhana bhakti, as the direct activities. That's that, but, you know, there's a few big ifs in there. Like, you got it right. What's necessary? And then the other is, okay, now it's bona fide, I'm going to, you know, create a universe. Oh, by the way, it's for Krishna. So the mindfulness of Krishna has to be there. And then if and if and if, then it's as liberating. So this yukta vairagya principle is a little tricky. It's a slippery slope. It's our philosophy. It's our way of life. It's Lord Chaitanya's teaching. But one has to be very, very careful. So this verse is going in the, it's expanding on the ayata gunaham, the unnecessary attraction for sex life. This is expanding on that. And very kindly, Prabhupada puts at the very end of the purport, sometimes there are persons that don't succumb to trying to be the enjoyers of that material, all-pervasive force and enter into household life and do things properly. And by doing things properly, it helps their spiritual life and it helps them achieve liberation. It helps them remember Krishna. That's what it's intended for. By not like by design. Yeah, by design. So meaning go back even before the first act of procreation, that is the glance of Mahavishnu. And the glance has a name. And the glance is Shambhu. And all the other things that go with the glance. So what happens before the glance? Before the first act of procreation, there's two things described in Canto 3, Chapter 5, verse something like 14, where Mahavishnu, two things. Mahavishnu is enjoying pastimes, transcendental pastimes, with his internal potency, Rama Devi. And he's thinking two things. One is the living entities that are within his transcendental body in a susupti state. He wants them to enjoy with him in eternal pastimes as he is enjoying with Ramadevi, for his pleasure, for their pleasure. Or, you know, so he's feeling incomplete. This is missing. So it's explicitly expressed like that. And the other is, he sees the reflection of Rama Devi. In some places she's called Chaya Devi. In other places she is called Pradhan, another nomenclature. She doesn't have any service, and he wishes to give her some service because he knows she wants some service, and she's now in a dormant state. So those two things. So that's like what's behind creation, the purpose of creation. We can say other things, that the Supreme Lord wants to provide the living entities an opportunity to act out their desires to enjoy separately, which is impossible. So he creates illusion, so they can try to do that which is impossible within the realm of illusion. But there's the other part, again emphasizing, to correct them. Like a prison is a house of detention and a house of correction. And, you know, at least the ideal part is increase the correction component of prisons. I don't know how successful they are, but that's the intention. At least euphemistically, they speak like that. So that's got the Lord's purpose is rectifying, bringing the living entities back. And so this original act of procreation, and so the downstream act of procreation within the elements of creation. So, my dear devotees, the lesson here is how to address that in such a way it serves liberation and actually helps one further in spiritual life and helps one remember Krishna. That's the challenge. And that's the immediate subject matter here. The subject matter is presented in so many other places in the Bhagavatam. It's an important item for us to resolve. as we're trying to progress back home, back to Godhead. And there are different ashrams to process that in different ways, ashram specific and then an individual specific within that ashram. It's like fire. Prabhupada sometimes spoke like that. Fire has its utilization, but if you're not careful, not only you'll get burned, the whole house will burn down, the whole place will burn down, just from fire. Little one. Just start with a little one. The whole house can burn down. So it has to be managed very carefully. It doesn't mean, oh my God, it means be careful. When you come near fire, it has its utility, and be very careful. For our purposes, the utility is not what's described here. For our purpose, the utility is one thing. And otherwise, it doesn't have utility. So one thing is producing God-conscious children, and that means you have to have the qualification to take the child and help the child become God-conscious. So that means you have to have God-consciousness to give God-consciousness. So that's pretty big responsibility. But and then otherwise, it's not to be utilized. This verse is describing those that don't have that understanding, or they don't have it together, and so they're overly attached to this attractive feature of material existence, and they get themselves in trouble. The bottom part of the verse is the I and mine part. So the I and mine part, it's real simple. I'm this body, and what comes from this body is mine. False ego, and from false ego, that's the misconception of who I am. And by the way, when Shambhu, who is the name for the glance, he presides over our dear friend false ego. So, connected with that attraction for duplicating the original procreative function comes false ego. I mean, it naturally is there. It's not a one, two, it's one, two. They're simultaneous. False ego, identification with the body. That's the aham part. And then that which produced from the body follows. So the I and mind part is illustrated by the third line. Ato means ataha, means thereafter. So Prabhupada, when describing this verse, I've heard it maybe 300 times, describing this line, griha, home. And because it starts with pungsa striya, so striya, I'm just repeating what Prabhupada said, you know, hundreds of times. Striya means one who expands. So the man in contact with the woman develops some attraction and things start to expand, because that's what striya does. Things start to expand. You have to have a home. And then after home, we have to have an occupation. And in Vedic culture, the occupation was till the land. It's agrarian-based society. It's not like go work for AT&T or get an IT job or something like that. It was get some land, because you have to have grains and a cow. And, you know, so you have a home, you got to have some land. And then guess what comes next? Children. Sutta and apta, relatives, and then you have to, you know, bring the relatives around to appreciate, look at this home and look at this land, look at the children, come on over and, you know, pay a visit. And then, you know, to maintain the whole thing, you need some wealth. And wealth can be represented in different forms, stockpiles or quantities of something, grain commonly, grain and ghee and so forth. Or in modern times is, you know, moolah. Have some, you got to have some dinero. And that's what happens. It's just from this, you know, he becomes attracted to her and she becomes attracted to him and woo, woo, woo. And then all the whole thing starts to unfold. That's the ata, then all this stuff. And then the last line is the I and mine becomes stronger. Janasya moho yam aham mameti. The moha is delusion, bewilderment, covered. You know, covering means you forget Krishna. Just to like buy into the program without Krishna is common. That's what this verse is describing. Again, Prabhupada very appropriately speaks of, doesn't have to be that way. He's advising, Rishabhdeva is advising his sons, and anyone who's giving guidance to another person will advise that other person, don't fall into the trap that's ever so common. It's quite uncommon to not fall into the trap. Even you say, oh, I won't fall into the trap, then you fall into the trap. Because it's like, one, two, three. Do it again, one, two, three. It's just the force of material nature is very powerful. And living entity is, you know, very tiny. So you have something very powerful against something very tiny. Guess what happens? Janasya moho, what happens? The people in general become bewildered. And I'll go back to yesterday's verse, and that is, you know, the same term, unnecessary. Ayata. What's necessary? So one can be, we spoke about this, something that's like, you know, the devotee that was trying to perform Nirjal Ekadasi, and, you know, it just wasn't his adhikar. He didn't have the qualification to do it. And he made a big fool of himself. So one can also not understand what one's necessity is and try to imitate someone that has a greater, you know, qualification, spiritual qualification, and make a fool of themselves. So that's not advised. One should like the discussion that we were having. One should have some sense of what one's situation is, one's qualification is, and there are ways to do that. The question came up yesterday. What was his name? No, the one sitting next to Krishna. Sitting, you know, came in late. What was his name? Sean? Asked, how do I know what is my dharma? What is my duty? Wow. So we discussed self-evaluation, scripture, a qualified person helping you to understand because we're attached and they're not attached. At least ideally they're not attached. They're not attached to what we're attached to anyways. And so they're able to see things that we may not be able to see and get some guidance in what our proper duty is. Where is this line for me? Not like they're going to tell you, okay, boom. But they'll help you understand this seems appropriate for you. And over here is, you know, it's not realistic, and over there is excessive. Here is a very realistic, somewhere in this range is realistic for you. At least that's how I see it, and so on. So it's delicate. It's very important to get it right, as we discussed yesterday. Go too much this side or too much that side, we're in the soup. So be very careful to get it right and monitor it. And then those things, I'm repeating from yesterday, but those things that we do recognize as is necessary for me or appropriate for me according to my psychophysical condition. We don't do those things with the mentality of sense gratification because this is what happens when you do. And it's not a nice program. Be very careful. Be very careful. And another point is Tayor mito hridaya grantim ahu. Tayor is both of them, not just one of them, not just him or not just her. They're both of them. Tayor mito, you know, they mito between one another. He attached to her, she attached to him, and then all this other stuff that's down in the third line, and attached and attached and attached and attached and attached, starts with attached. And so, tayor mito hridaya grantim ahu. Hridaya grantim. We heard about hridaya grantim in the first canto Srimad Bhagavatam. Remember? First canto Srimad Bhagavatam? In the second chapter, in the verses that are describing the gradual progression of bhakti, the hridaya grantim is described in text 15 of canto 1, chapter 2. Yad anudyasina yukta karma granti nabandhanam. And then this is the nice part. Chindanti kovidas tasya ko na kuryat kata ratim. There's the sword. Krishna kata. And not even just Krishna kata, but kata ratim. We know what rati means. It's another name for bhava. Here in the word for word, Prabhupada is translated as attention, or like beyond the stage of asakti is rati. Asakti is attached, and rati is what happens when you're attached. But when you're attached to Krishna, rati happens. And then so kata ratim, rapt attention. So we're not there yet, but we can practice, especially when chanting, or the direct practices of bhakti, when you're worshiping the deity, or when you're studying scripture. You know, the mind may want to wander, and you just by practice and cultivation, it's not just by discipline. We were hearing some of the students yesterday explain what their attraction for meditation. And discipline is certainly a part of it. But rati doesn't happen just by discipline. Rati happens when, by the discipline, by following the vidhis of bhakti, one becomes cleansed. And in that cleansed state, the mind or consciousness in touch with Krishna, it's iron filings in a magnet. It's very powerful. The mind just wants to go there. So, meaning, you know, your life is busy. Take time every day and like turn off the busy and sit down and chant without busy stuff going on around you or in the mind. Be very focused and studying Prabhupada's books also. If you practice like that, something happens. Besides cleansing, some attraction for the subject matter. Like a happiness from just not hanging out with Srimad Bhagavatam, but getting absorbed in Srimad Bhagavatam. Something happens. Ooh, it's nice. And then you like plan your day to get some time to be with Srimad Bhagavatam again. And it's not like duty or something. This part of my day I do this, and that part of my day I do that. And it's one of the duties that I do. But it becomes something that the mind becomes attracted, and it becomes easy to get absorbed. And then the stuff, it just like sits over there for a while, and you'll attend to the stuff later because now it's Bhagavatam and chanting. And it can be the same with deity worship. You know, the busy mind, and there you are serving the deity. You know, that's not right. I should be attending to the deity, not with, you know, stuff. By practice and attachment to the deity, and by our direct practices of bhakti, because Krishna, non-different than the original personality of Godhead, Krishna, the deity form, the book form, the name form, etc., we're in direct contact with Krishna. So that's the advice of the second canto, excuse me, second chapter, first canto. Chindanti. The Hridaya Granthis becomes cut, like Prabhupada is saying, it's hard not to untie. And the first canto says, just cut it. and there's the sword. Hearing and chanting. And you know, the sword could be very dull. You could, you know, not cutting, because my mind is still over there. Keep the sadhana, the faith in the process, and the faith in, you know, where the process is coming from, the instructions of scripture and the instructors that are showing and explaining how to do it, in large part because they're doing it. So it carries strength, because behind the message is the realization of the message, the God consciousness that comes from properly having cultivated the process. So exactly like that is what's happening in Rishabhdev's instructions to his sons, because he's there. He's like, besides the fact, it's not a small fact, he's an incarnation of God. But even aside from his incarnation of God position, he lived that life that he's advising his sons to live. Now, mind you, he had 100 sons. He wasn't, prior to his becoming an Abhidhuta, like turning the kingdom over to Bharat Maharaj, etc., he was involved in family affairs, all these things that he's advising against. But he did it properly. He was that, you know, exception that Prabhupada speaks of in the purport. And we're also being trained to be the exception if one enters into household life. And if one doesn't enter into household life, one remains brahmachari. That's also very nice. One shouldn't contemplate something that I recall Prabhupada saying on a number of occasions, not as many as he spoke about this verse, but a brahmachari, on behalf of the spiritual master, may go door to door and beg alms on behalf of the spiritual master. That's the, you know, the classic. And or in the present day, go book distribution door to door, preaching in people's homes and give Krishna consciousness. So that's the present form of the classic of the brahmachari goes door to door to beg alms for the guru. Prabhupada's advice is the brahmachari should not think, or the sannyasi should not think, wow, look at this opulent place here. Maybe I'm missing out. And if one thinks like that, he becomes fallen. So that the purpose of extending like that is giving, not getting, and giving association, giving the message of Krishna consciousness. And actually it's an opportunity to see, instead of, oh, maybe I'm missing out, what a trick Maya is playing. Without Krishna Katha in this person's life, they're thinking happiness is stuff, accumulation of stuff, which, because of the brahmacharis or sannyasis' practice, They understand, not theoretically, they understand this is all ephemeral. There's no substance in any of this. And the person who is thinking, how unfortunate. So one should be on that side of the sword, not the other side of the sword. Where, by proper devotional practice, one can see this is the snare of Maya. And has not only this family, but so many other living entities, going back to the first part of the verse. Pungsam striya. Male and female going woo, 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 and then all the rest. How unfortunate. So he's training his sons, don't be captured, don't be enamored by that. And so some of them remained, nine of them, remained unmarried, and Uttama Adhikari Vaishnavas, perfected beings. Others became kings and others became brahmanas and so forth. But with the proper training, then one can take up those situations in a proper way. At least the potential is there. So we're being trained also in this nice verse. Yes.
On the second line, Tayor Mito Hridaya Grantam Ahu. So there's a mutual attachment,
yes,
in the heart. And I think Prabhupada is speaking about it in the purport that even if you give it up, it might not give you up.
Yes.
And therefore you might again fall back into the unfavorable situation. So I was wanting to give three scenarios in which you can discuss how to give this up, because
how to do that?
How to, even when I'm trying to give up something, because the attachment is also on the other side, I get again allured into the unfavorable situation. So I wanted to give three scenarios how one might work through this, because I'm hearing from devotees who are going through various things. One situation is, you know, an unmarried boy and unmarried girl, and one of them's trying to give up the other one, but the other one's attached. How might the devotee deal with that? Another scenario is family, where one is becoming maybe more detached from family, but the family members, you know, are also pulling. And the other one is a little bit unique example.
What the other one is?
My third one is computers.
Computers.
Where a lot of persons struggle with unfavorable activities on the computers, and they find it very difficult to give up. So I wanted to give these three scenarios how a devotee who's trying to move ahead might deal with this situation.
Should I take him in sequence like that? Well, the first one, it so much depends on the particulars. But in principle, advice or counsel needs to be given to the individual, him and her, to, you know, help them to look inside their heart. Is there attraction for giving up that association? Where is it coming from? Is it based on higher taste? Is it based on aversion? Is it based on misunderstanding of what it means to be in a relationship? You know, where's that aversion? Where's that push away coming from? Because if you don't know and you just like walk away, the bungee cord is going to happen. You know, if it's not that person, it's going to be another person because it wasn't real. So where's it coming from? You know, who are you? And what's your real situation? And the other person that's, you know, is attached, Same way, you know, what is it that you're attached to? Are you attached to an object? Are you attached to being an enjoyer? Are you attached to the person? If you're the well-wisher of the person, then you can let them go through whatever they have to go through because you're the well-wisher of the person. But if you're just operating on the platform of I'm attached, you know, you got some work to do. Because you're not necessarily the well-wisher of the other person, you're the well-wisher of your senses rather than the other person. So how are you going to have a relationship with, you know, that's the dynamic? It won't be a relationship. It'll be exploitation. And guess what? You're the one that gets exploited, not just the other person. Oh, you know, like reality check. And then, you know, okay, when that's over, do you want to have a relationship? The second one was, do it again? But expand it again?
Yeah, I'm getting a little detached from family affairs.
That's good. That's okay. Perform the duties as if attached. It's very similar to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's instructions to Raghunath Das. Don't be this goofy person. Go back to your family life. Live as if you are attached. And Krishna will take care of you. Like mom and dad and the kid and brothers and sisters, that stuff? Yeah? Well, you know, that's a little different. That's be respectful and cultivate, you know, internally, be respectful. Externally, show your respect. But internally, you know, what is it? Where do you want to go? Where does the soul want to go? Where do you want to go? Do you want to go back or do you want to go toward Krishna? So be clear what you want. Okay, there's some mix because otherwise you wouldn't be, you know, disturbed. You'd just be going to Krishna and you know what to do, but it's a mix. So be clear where the path of spiritual life, Krishna consciousness, will take you. You progressively go towards Krishna and certainly in a dutiful way and certainly in a respectful way, act as if you're attached and monitor how much attachment is there. And to counteract to address that attachment because you know what the result of material attachment will take you, cultivate more strongly your attachment for Krishna. And ultimately, you know, you can't pretend to be something you're not. I mean, it's not sustainable. So be very clear who you are and progressively nivritti. Act in a responsible way and cultivate your Krishna consciousness. And you may have to do that inwardly, particularly when you're in the association of family members. I know some nice devotees. If this is now speaking more grihasthas, their parents don't even know that they're devotees. They've deliberately, like, it's camouflaged. They don't even know. And there was some apprehension, and they've camouflaged it so well, they don't know. And they keep it that way. It's not like, in course of time, because, you know, they know it'll just be calamity. It'll cause disruption for the parents, and then in turn disruption for them, but most importantly disruption for the parents, so they just don't go there. But in the case of a brahmachari, you can't camouflage it. You're a brahmachari. So the brahmachari that's appreciative and grateful to what parents have given, rightly so, that can be expressed directly and indirectly. For sure, indirectly. Because if it's expressed directly, then they say, well, in that case, you know, leave that place and come out over here. So then it's particulars, the individual and the parents and, you know, dynamics and siblings and, you know. Third one? Oh. It's like addiction. And how do you help somebody that's got an addiction? It's a modern addiction, but it's an addiction. Very debilitating. Very debilitating. Addictions are very debilitating. And it's formidable. I mean, it can go in degrees. It could just be wasting time. And then it can be not just wasting time, but indulging in awful stuff while wasting time. And it's pervasive. It's not like occasionally some people, it's pervasive. And, you know, and kids get trained up from little with all the electronic gadgets and toys and stuff, and they know how to operate and, you know, maneuver their way through stuff, and nobody knows except, you know, their determination goes out the window. And even just like, you don't even have to see a computer and then think, well, maybe I could. They don't even have to see the computer. It's just an addiction. It's really sad. And as far as I understand, it's purposeful from the marketing side. It's hooking the sucker and getting him addicted to a fix. And once you got them, you got them. And they're addicted. So it's really mean. And then when somebody's on the other end of that, depending upon the degrees of it, it's tough. It's like, you know, you need a 12-step program to get people off of computer addictions. And then, you know, one of the key things was two key things, as far as I understand how those systems work. It's faith in God and association of others who are similarly struggling. And then, of course, somebody that's not struggling, but, you know, how many days they've gone without alcohol or without drugs and so on. How many days I've gone without looking at the computer? In some disgusting way. Because then they have to do it for their service or for their job or for their, you know, something. And then, you know, the lure is there. So it's very difficult. So those, the association, accountability, honesty, God, and, you know, higher taste. Again, it's chindanti kovidas tasya koyat kuryat kona koryat kadaratim. Cultivating hearing and chanting. Instead of smoking the cigarette, Prabhupada would say, chant around. So when that urge is there, pull out your bead bag or read, so you can read a lot. And I there's somebody that I know that I've been helping coach them with this, and they just decided, you know, like a little strong encouragement, but they decided instead of wasting time with internet browsing and, you know, news and starts like innocent like that and goes off in other directions, because I have time at my workplace, I'm going to now go to a place where I can read Prabhupada's books on the internet. And they really like it. And as far as they're reporting to me, and I think, it's, you know, they're honest about reporting, it stopped because they really like reading. So that's our sword. And if one doesn't take the sword, then it's just you're going to stay forever addicted. That's my sense. Because, like you say, you pull away, but like Krishna's verse in Bhagavad Gita. You give up the sense objects, but in the mind, it's still contemplating the sense object. It's not sufficient. That means in course of time, we'll go back to the sense object. In a moment of weakness or... So higher taste, association, faith in God, strong hearing and chanting program, like that. Yes.
As you were answering that question, I was also thinking from my own experience, observing and personal, that reaching for a sort of lower indulgences is sometimes an indication of not being properly engaged on the level where we actually are. So then the mind and everything has the...
That's the higher taste principle.
Okay.
You know, one thing leads to the next thing. My aversion, or let's say my laxity, complacency in that which is accessible to me opens the door for weaknesses, or the converse. If I take up those things that lead to and provide a higher taste, like chanting, reading, and associating, deity worship, and so on, if I take up those things properly, the lower taste is diminished. That's like the stage of nishtha, nashtaprayeshu, abhadreshu, almost gone. Or sufficient. The bhakti principle is so strong that even what residual amount remains, it can't act because the bhakti is so strong. And prior to that, then there's sometimes win and sometimes lose, the struggle with maya, for lack of higher taste. Something else. Gokulananda, you got something? Yeah?
But I have something.
Okay.
Regarding, for example, maybe someone may be able to control their lower tendencies.
Yeah.
But those tendencies manifest in a subtle way.
In a subtle way.
Through different desires like fame or through anger or many other things. If you can speak a little.
Maya is very tricky. She knows where weaknesses are, and she presses on them. And if she can't go through the front door, she'll go through the side door, the chimney, the basement, the back door. Gross and subtle. Anything to distract us from Krishna. And once we say yes to Maya, then she takes more and more and more and more. And so it's like we may be able to manage something on the grosser platform, but the subtle platform, then we get drawn in. And then the grosser also follows from the subtle. So it's not that subtle Maya stays always subtle. It comes out in other forms. Pride. I was having a discussion yesterday with someone about pride. And even the tendency, what conditioned soul doesn't have? Tendency for pride. And then just combine that with offense. And down. You know, criticizing devotees. Hey, it goes on all the time. People criticize other devotees. So, you know, what's the problem with criticizing devotees? All the kids are doing it. And there's pride in my heart. And those two things combined, it was, you know, And we were looking at different examples of persons this individual knows where, you know, did that person have pride in their heart? Yes. Were they harsh with in their dealings with devotees sometimes? Yes. And where are they now? In a very, very unfortunate condition. It didn't go like, you know, from 10 to 0 in 2 seconds. It was gradual. So subtle, you know, it can destroy everything. One should be very careful. We're in a dangerous place. Padam padam yadvi padam nate sham. And it happens over and over. It's not like if you have your eyes open, you can see it happening over and over. And, you know, the foolish person thinks, no, it won't happen to me. Left, right, and sideways is happening over and over, but it won't happen to me. And then their response was, I'm feeling afraid. And I said, the fear is different than being cautious. You don't have to be afraid of fire. Handle it carefully. I'm remembering when Shamasaki, it was the day that Gornatai were brought to your home, and you were little. And I was inviting you to do the arti, and your father stopped you. Remember that? I remember it. And his concern was the ghee lamp, because you were little. He didn't want to see a fire in the house. So I was like, okay. But whether it was overly cautious or not, fire is fire, and fire can, if a little thing, can be very dangerous. So being cautious with a little thing is good. And this little subtle things. As we progress in Krishna consciousness, it becomes important, increasingly more important, to attend to those things. Because we may think, oh, I took care of the gross ones. And, you know, the worst part of the subtle ones. So now we become complacent. Look out. Especially as one progresses in spiritual life. Complacency, there's no place for complacency. A little thing can become very dangerous. It's not like, oh, now I'm afraid. It's where you should be cautious. That was my point. Not fear, but be cautious. We're on the path, you know, the razor's edge example. It has a very good utility, razors. But in the hands of someone that's not cautious, it's blood. So it's not don't use a razor, but be very cautious. Be fearful all the time. It's be cautious all the time. And, you know, even in these subtle things. Fire. Yes, and that's part two.
Part two. And then some advice, if you can give, how the devotees should deal with guilt.
Deal with guilt?
Guilt, when it's not presented in a healthy way, as push them down to give up devotional service because they may commit sinful activity, and then they feel guilty.
I mean, if they deviate, then they feel guilty?
Yes.
Well, that's a whole other topic than this one. It's a nice topic, but it's a whole other topic. Want to go there? I don't know if we have time. It's just a quick response. Regret is one thing, guilt is another thing. And regret is wholesome. It leads to elevation if it's handled properly. And guilt is like the mode of ignorance. It takes one down. Lamentation, moroseness, melancholy. Woo. It doesn't lead to elevation. So, rather, remorse, Bhaktisiddhanta, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says this is a Vaishnav form of tapa, then let me take the steps to make sure that that doesn't happen again. And it may happen again. Recommitment. I want to make sure this won't happen again. And, you know, continuing to be firm in resolution that this won't happen again. That's different than guilt. That's resolve built on a strong foundation to go forward or upward. And again, the principle, besides the regret part, is developing a higher taste. That's the protection that we need. And a little bit like what Rasika Manjari, who's not here today, but said yesterday, you know, having your heart filled with feelings of love because someone cares and they're really preparing you and equipping you and, you know, they're with you. And that's protection too. To not repeat or to get stronger and overcome this lower nature thing. That's not guilt, that's elevation. Jari Nishtha?
Thank you, Maharaj. I had a question. The last statement of the purport was mentioning even...
Last statement where?
Of the purport was mentioning even a sannyasi can become attached to his few
positions.
It's
not in the last statement of the purport. It's in the purport. I was thinking there's a nice story from Ramanujacharya's life. Because of time, the story in detail is very, very attractive. But because of time, I won't do the detail. It's Ramanujacharya was showing special appreciation and kindness and affection for a grihastha couple who previously were in big maya, like super maya. He was a, you know, wrestler of a king and like this big, strong guy, and he had a girlfriend who was a prostitute. And Ramanujacharya met him or saw him across the street at the time of a big festival, because they have these big festivals regularly in Sri Vaishnava tradition. So the deity was being brought in procession, and the brahmanas and the musical instruments, and he was oblivious. Ramanujacharya said, does he recognize what a fool he's behaving like? He doesn't even see the procession. He's just staring at the woman, and she's looking at him, and it's so blatantly disgusting. Who is that person? And so he was told who the person is and said, ask him to come here. So they were, anyway, so fast forward, he gave up his attraction by seeing the eyes of Ranganath instead of seeing the eyes of the woman. Ramanuja just said, if you're attracted to her eyes, if I were to show you eyes more attractive than these eyes, would you accept the more attractive eyes? He said, yes, of course. So he brought him before the deity, and he said, these are more attractive eyes. Forget the girl. I'm with you. And then they both became disciples. She also came, and they became disciples. But, you know, he still had this external kind of opulence, because he was an opulent person. And the sannyasis were criticizing Ramanuja. They didn't, not to Ramanuja, but about Ramanuja. Why is he doing this? This isn't right. And, you know, blah, blah, blah. So he heard, And then he invited his sannyasi. He says, I want to teach you a lesson. Or maybe it wasn't even the sannyasis. It was like learned associates. So he arranged for two different scenarios. One was where the sannyasis lived, who had next to nothing. Somebody went in the middle of the night and moved this man's dhoti to that place and that man's dhoti to that place and this man's kopins to that place. And when they woke up in the morning, they had the furor. Who took my dhoti? My dhoti. Rah, 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 rah. And so the learned persons were observing. And then he said, okay, now you go to the home of Quraysh. Is that his name? Not Quraysh. What's his name? D, yes. Anyone know? Huh? Dhanurdhar. Dhanurdhar, yes. I'm going to invite Dhanurdhar to come see me. And you go to his home. His wife will be asleep. And, steal from their home and see what happens. And so they went stealthily. And, Dhanurdhar was with Ramanuja. And they took the earrings and ornaments from this side of her body that was asleep. And she rolled over to give them the other side. And then they thought she woke up and they ran. And when Dhanurdhar came back and he found out what happened, he said, why did you not just give them? And why did you have to have them run? This is terrible. They're poor Vaishnavas, and they may need something. And look what you've done, a bad thing. And they were observing, the learned persons were observing this dialogue between Dhanurdhar and his wife. And they realized, wow, they're completely detached. And the sannyasis were completely attached. Although the quantum of their possessions was negligible, they were attached. And although the quantum of Dhanurdhar and his wife was a lot, they were detached. So they got the message. Why he's appreciative of Dhanurdhar was his Krishna consciousness, which was the basis of his detachment. So a sannyasi may be externally have given up stuff, but, attached to his little situation, whatever that is. Like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said about his followers who were fighting over who would get which room in the Bagh Bazar temple. This is the biggest room and I'm the biggest devotee, so I should get the biggest room. No, I should get the biggest room because I'm the biggest devotee, and they were fighting like that. So-called renunciation. Okay?
Yeah, my question was also, because it's based on the bodily concept.
Sure, that's where attachment comes from, isn't it?
Yes.
That's the mind. Come from I.
So as far as getting out of that, the verse comes to mind from Bhagavad Gita, mam cha yo vyabhicharina bhakti yogena sevate. So by unhesitating devotional service, one gets out of the body concept.
Sure, but how are you going to get unhesitating or unflinching devotional service if you're in the bodily conception?
That's the question.
Yeah. So you need a spiritual conception. Read some of the other verses in Bhagavad Gita that speak about the spiritual conception besides, undivided devotional service in a spiritual conception. Get the ABCs right before you start spelling and making sentences.
And so how is that affected? Like, is there a middle range where one's in the bodily concept,
sure,
one's out of the bodily concept?
Of course. Look around.
So is it like a meditation, or is it...
It's Krishna consciousness. It's Krishna consciousness. Certainly part of Krishna consciousness is meditation, but it's Krishna consciousness and manifest in different ways. It's a progressive, it's a gradual process, right? Because we're attached. That's what Prabhupada's teaching is. It can happen at once, but because we're attached, it's gradual. And so in the gradual phase, there's a mix. And we're cultivating, and we're attached. Welcome to the Hare Krishna movement, or to the path of spiritual progress. That's reality. And we're our association is not to criticize one another. Oh, look at that person's attached. And that's part of our attachment. It's part of our fall down, is to do that. We're to assist and be of service to the other devotees. be a good example and discuss confidentially and hear and chant together and help one another go further on the path of spiritual progress. Not like be blind, but not be fault finders either. Okay, I'm going to end there. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada.